This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Atlantic hurricane season extends from June through November. It just started 11 days ago, and 5 days into the season, the first tropical storm of the year, Andrea, dropped tons of rain up and down the East Coast. We've had 2 to 6 inches with flooding. And this is just the beginning of what forecasters say will be a very busy year for strong storms. A number of different agencies here and in Europe have made their annual predictions, and they vary in terms of the number of named tropical storms and hurricanes we can expect, but they're all predicting an above-average year. But how do forecasters arrive at those annual conclusions, and why do they think we're in for it this year? We've brought in 3 Charlotte weather experts to explain those predictions and more this hour. If you watch television, you know them all, so they really need no introduction, but I'll do it anyway, but in no particular order so as not to ruffle any feathers. I promise you guys, I tossed a coin on this. My own coin, mind you. Steve Utelson is chief meteorologist at WSOC TV Channel 9. He spent a lot of time forecasting and reporting on hurricanes and tropical storms here and prior to his arrival in Charlotte in both West Palm Beach and Tampa. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Mike. Good to be back.
Mm-hmm. And Brad Panovich is chief meteorologist at WCNC TV Channel 36, who did his share of hurricane chasing while at WWL TV in New Orleans, including covering Hurricane Katrina for that station. Good to see you again as well.
Good to see you, Mike.
And later on, we'll be joined by Kelly Franson, a meteorologist at WBTV Channel 3, who just got off the air and is probably in transit at the moment. I've said this at the top of the program. It's fun to talk to you people because you are the smartest people on television. You really are, because they're not just pretty faces standing in front of a green screen. They're actually scientists who know what the heck they're talking about.
Or at least we pretend to.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration predicted an active or extremely active hurricane season this year. They say to look for 13 to 20 named storms, 11 of which should become hurricanes. Several other agencies have made similar predictions, including Colorado State University. I'm not sure why they're involved in the hurricane business out there. University College in London, United Kingdom's Met Office. Which agency do you, the two of you, pay the closest attention to?
I'd probably say NOAA and Dr. Gray and his colleagues. Not that he does as much of the forecasting anymore out at Colorado State, but those forecasts you look at quite a bit. And there's a couple other energy sector companies I look at quite a bit down in the Houston area, mm-hmm. because obviously they're very tied into what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. But I'll be honest, I know what Steve would say, but I'm not as big on these hurricane season forecasts as maybe the public are, because I think they're really for meteorological consumption, for public consumption. I don't think they're very useful, to be honest with you.
Why?
Because the number of named storms is really irrelevant to the impact on people in the United States. Because you got to remember, this is a forecast for the entire Atlantic Basin, which stretches from the coast of Africa to the northern tip of South America to the northern Atlantic up into Europe. So the number of storms that occur in there aren't as important as the ones that occur on the U.S. coast. And I could give you a good example of, Hurricane Andrew. That year, 7 storms.
Right.
7 storms in the whole Atlantic, but one of them was Andrew. I don't think many people would sit there and tell you that was a below-average season. They would tell you, if you lived in South Florida or Louisiana, that that was a horrible season. And then you have seasons like in the mid-90s when you had 20 storms, and they're all fish storms, and none of them impact the United States. So I'm not as keen on the numbers because I think they misrepresent what the impacts could be, because it really only takes one storm, Mike, hitting your town for it to be a bad season.
So where do you come down on this?
I agree with Brad. I mean, a lot of the problem is apathy. I mean, we have had a very active pattern ever since the mid-90s. I think we've only had one below-average season since 1995. And because, say Charlotte, okay, the last time we saw the direct effects of a storm, Hugo, 1989, long, long time ago. And we've had rain from Ivan and Francis back in 04, but I mean, it's been a long time, so we almost think that we are invincible from tornadoes and, I mean, from hurricanes, and that's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, aren't we? I remember when Hugo came through, and I was at WBT, and the folks at AccuWeather, who we used to use over there, I think they still do, kept telling us, Hugo's coming through, and you don't understand what this means. Mm-hmm. And we would say, oh, there's going to be some wind, there's going to be some rain. No, it's coming through, and you better get ready for it. You better prepare your listeners for this. Ah, it'll be all right. And then it came through, and we found out exactly what it meant.
Yeah. Hardwood trees and hurricanes do not mix well.
Yeah. So we had two, I didn't know this till yesterday, we had two tropical storms prior to the start of hurricane season, Alberto and Beryl, and yet they're started over again on June 1st with Andrea. Is that because these two will not count, because they were not in the official season?
I don't think those were actually in the Atlantic season.
Okay.
What happened, we had Barbara and we had two storms in the Pacific, which oftentimes people get confused of, because the Pacific hurricane season starts on May 15th. And the Eastern Pacific gets pretty active actually early in the season, because you're talking off the west coast of Mexico. And the thing about those storms, they rarely impact land. They usually go out to sea, or they affect Cabo San Lucas, or they go into western Mexico. And actually, I would argue that Andrea was actually kind of the ghost of Barbara, because it crossed over central Mexico, dissipated, and it kind of lingered down in the Gulf of Mexico for a couple days, and then it kind of reformed as Andrea.
Let me ask you this, then, because when you watch the weather, if you watch it with any frequency, you understand that weather systems in the United States seem to go from west to east. You can watch a storm enter Washington State and whip itself across the country, and yet hurricanes go east to west for the most part.
That's because the winds way up high at those latitudes down in the tropics push the other direction, the easterlies.
Huh.
So things form off the coast of Africa and continue to shove west.
So is that why we seem to have hurricanes and Europe does not?
Yeah, for the most part. But Europe, you got to remember, too, Europe's got very cold water off of the coast up there. The only area that really gets remnants, or I would – sometimes they're not really even hurricanes. I call them subtropical storms. But is England and Ireland, because they're close to the Gulf Stream. And sometimes those storms will ride the Gulf Stream and get all the way up there to the British Isles and hammer them. Occasionally, there's been a couple in the Mediterranean that have been kind of marginal tropical cyclones, Spain and Portugal. And I believe it wasn't too long ago, there was one in the Mediterranean. So it's very rare to get storms that far north, because the water's cold and you have a ton of wind shear. I always thought it was interesting, you know, when I moved to New Orleans for the first time, how if you live pretty much in the southern half of the country, half the year the weather does come from west to east or northwest to southeast. And then the summer sets in, you got the Bermuda High. And then you start looking to the southeast. You start looking for tropical waves and moisture coming off the Atlantic. So it's almost like from the warm season to the cool season here, you get a flip in where our weather patterns come from. And that's really just because the jet streams start to go back north. And as Steve said, you know, down in those latitudes, you got things moving from east to west. And it's just fascinating.
This is the time of year when that flip is occurring, which is why this is our severe weather season.
Exactly.
It's sort of the last of the cool air meeting the warm air. And I mean, it's got off to a very late start this year. I think, what was it, before May 1st, the calendar year going back to 2012 was the fewest number of tornadoes on record.
Yeah, it was the fewest number of, really? Of deaths, too, in a 12-month period since they've been keeping records since the 50s back at the Storm Prediction Center.
Huh. Now, why is it that this year meteorologists feel that we're likely to get more storms and even stronger storms? What's going on that makes them make that prediction?
Well, a lot of it has to do with warm water. The Atlantic has been above average temperature-wise for years, and that's not going to really change much. And the other are the wind patterns. Wind patterns continue to be relatively light in the Atlantic, stronger in the Pacific, and that allows these storms to form. As strong as hurricanes are, they need something to steer them.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's the winds way up high that do that. And if they're light, as Brad talked about, shear, if there's not a lot of shear ripping these storms apart, they'll just continue to grow.
We are joined now by Kelly Franson, a meteorologist at WBTV, who literally just got off the air.
And yes, good morning.
In the studio, welcome to you. I don't know how much of you of this conversation you've listened to, but we have a guy over here who's a naysayer,
Mr. Panovich,
who says that it really doesn't matter about what forecasters predict for hurricane season in terms of the number of named storms, because we only really care about the storms that impact us when they have landfall in the United States. Are you in that camp with Mr. Panovich?
Very much so. We've seen that several times over the last several years, where we have a number of storms incredibly high, but very few landfalling tropical storms or hurricanes in the United States. Last year, of course, everyone remembers Sandy. But other than Sandy, there really were very few impacts, even though we had many, many storms. A lot of them stayed out to sea.
And Brad also said that he doesn't really see the value, in, except for meteorologists, in these long-term forecast predictions in terms of how many storms we'll get and how powerful they may be. So where do you come down on that? And what's the purpose of making these predictions if we shouldn't care about them?
That's a good question. I think the public has gotten used to the idea that we're going to see these above average seasons again and again and again. And I think they hear that and just think, yeah, okay, whatever, moving on. This isn't news.
Yeah, and that's kind of what Steve was alluding to, was, you know, the apathy. And the biggest issue we have in the weather enterprise now is we've become very good forecasters. Where we start lagging is the communication aspect of it. And I think the reason I'm not a big fan of these is because for the general public, as Kelly just mentioned, you get these huge numbers of forecasts. There's 15 to 20 storms. And then 90% of the United States sees no impact. So what do? They sit around and think, well, if there's 15 to 20 storms and I had nothing happen to me, that means I have nothing to worry about from hurricanes.
I remember in the 90s people saying that we were going to have a lot of storms, and then they didn't come to the coast. They didn't do any damage at the beach. And those people who had beachfront property didn't have a problem. So they just thought, well, okay, we'll just keep building out here. Mm-hmm. And times were good and money was free, and and they kept doing it. You kind of felt like you were crying wolf, because you'd say, don't do this, but because you're putting yourself in harm's way, and then nothing would happen. Is that what happened, that we had a lot of storms, they just didn't make landfall, and you've got to find a better way to explain this to viewers and to people
out
there?
I think it's just, it's never a matter of if, it's always a matter of when. Mm-hmm. And the problem a lot of times in the human condition, we are kind of nurtured and brought up to think of things in our lifetimes. And I used to have this saying when I lived in New Orleans, and it was really true. There was several generations of New Orleanians who had never experienced a major hurricane. So what was their reaction to any storm? It's not going to happen. We tend to have this feeling like our level of preparedness is only good as our memory of the last disaster. Mm-hmm. If we have no recollection of what a major hurricane is, then we have no idea how to prepare or what to do. And so for many people, if you don't experience a generation of residents don't experience a hurricane, and one comes, they're lost because they don't know, they have no experience.
Yeah, I totally agree. Having spent 5 years in Tampa, mm-hmm. you think, you know, Florida Peninsula, they haven't had a direct hit, which means a storm within 50 miles of Tampa Bay when I was there, it was almost 70 years. Mm-hmm. And so when there was a storm forming in the Gulf or in the Atlantic coming toward Florida, how did they react? They had hurricane parties.
Yeah.
People would not leave. And that's a big issue, is that when the big one does come,
yeah.
and evacuations are ordered, a lot of people wind up staying. And it affects everyone, because we have to go pluck them out.
Is that what happened in Katrina? People didn't leave because they didn't think they'd have to leave?
I would say that was a large percentage of the people down there. Because,
even though we heard stories about people who couldn't get out because there was no transportation to get them out?
The thing about hurricanes, they don't sneak up on you, Mike. I mean, people could have literally walked to Baton Rouge in the time they had to get out of New Orleans. But they chose not to because their parents, their grandparents said, I was here for, I was here for Camille. And I was here for Betsy, and I was here for Ivan, and I was here for Andrew, and nothing happened in my house. So they stayed.
And the same thing happened during Sandy in the Northeast. People just don't expect that kind of damage out of a hurricane in the Northeast, and they didn't leave. When you, as forecasters, see stories on your own newscast, people say, I'm going to ride it out. What goes through your mind? I have 15 seconds.
Sheer stupidity.
Yeah.
I mean, because as meteorologists, we know what is going to be happening. I mean, people don't realize what the power of water is, whether it's a storm surge or just rain coming down.
We have to take a break. We're here with Steve Udelson, Brad Panovich, and Kelly Franson from WSOC-TV, WCNC, and WBTV. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with three mortal enemies who are not speaking to each other off the air. No, I'm just kidding. Steve Udelson is the chief meteorologist with WSOC-TV, Channel 9, and Eyewitness News. Brad Panovich is chief meteorologist with WCNC-TV, and Kelly Franson is on your side.
There you go.
Meteorologist with WBTV. In the Colorado State University 2013 hurricane season forecast, Philip Klotzbach, if that's how you say his name, and William Gray outlined the rising incidences of storms between 81 and 2010. The median number of named storms was 12. They're predicting 18 this year. Between 81 and 2010, the median number of named storm days was 60.1. They're predicting 95. They also say the probability for at least one major Category 3, 4, or 5 hurricane to make landfall is 72% along the coast. The average in the last century was only 52%. If they're right, clearly something is going on here. What is going on?
Well, I would say, there's multi-decadal cycles, which means in tropical meteorology, you tend to get decadal cycles of active hurricanes. And we know that we're getting to that phase right now. Now, certainly the warm waters that have, the ocean has warmed up incredibly in the last 10 to 15 years. So there's definitely...
When you say incredibly, how much has it warmed?
Well, you're talking about, sea surface anomalies, which is the difference from average. They're running 1 to 2 degrees Celsius in many locations, especially the Caribbean, the Gulf of Mexico, and off the east coast of the United States. So you have more energy, but that in and of itself wouldn't mean more storms. I mean, I always say, hurricanes need fuel, and fuel is warm water, but it's just like a car. If you put high-octane gas in it and you have a crummy engine, it's not going to do anything. One of the things you need as well is low wind shear, and Steve talked about this earlier. If we don't have a lot of shear, then you tend to get a lot of storms that build up, and if you have a lot of fuel, that combination can be very dangerous. And then if you throw in persistent steering currents that push everything into the southeast, then you end up with storm after storm after storm. And 2005 would be a good example where, Florida just got pummeled, and many of those residents just left the state, and now many of them are living up here in North Carolina.
So I did not hear you say the words global warming or climate change. What I heard you say was decadal, is that how you say it?
Multi-decadal.
Trends, cycles. Is that what this is? Because this is what the naysayers who say there's no such thing as global warming say, that we're just going through a cycle. It will get cooler again.
Well, some would say it already has started.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of evidence, and it's amazing. The thing that I find amazing, if you're going to start the global change comment.
Here we go.
is that two scientists, very smart people, can look at the same set of data and come up with very different conclusions. Some of the evidence that I've seen is the warmest year was 1998, and we've actually remained steady, if not even cooled since then.
Hmm.
There is a body of science that
says
that.
The liberals will tell you that there's 98% agreement among scientists that we are in a pattern of global warming.
Except that their scientists aren't necessarily climatologists or meteorologists. They're doctorates of whatever.
So where do you – because I remember talking to AccuWeather's Dr. Joe Sobel, and he told me that he didn't believe in it. So tell me what you believe.
I believe a lot of it that it is cycles. It's cyclical. I mean, you talked about hurricanes. Mm-hmm. I mean, those that are somewhat older remember the 50s and 60s as being extremely explosive for very powerful hurricanes. We had one after another come up the East Coast. Mm-hmm. 70s and 80s were relatively quiet. Mm-hmm. And that's when most of the building along the coast occurred, and people thought, we're out of the woods. Right. And then here come the mid-90s to 2000s, and so far this decade, much more active. So that's where the problem is.
Do the two of you agree with this, Kelly and Brad?
Probably along the same lines. If you're actually talking climate change, of course there's climate change. Climate has been changing forever, slowly but surely, going in different directions. A lot of it is cyclical. I think also a lot of it is, quite frankly, we don't know everything.
Yeah.
I know that's shocking. Yes. I know that's shocking, but there is a lot that we don't know. And over the course of time, we will, see what all is coming to pass, what all has happened. Will it be in our lifetimes? Quite honestly, who knows if we'll ever sort of come to a consensus on global warming. But I do honestly think that there are a lot of very smart people out there, but I also think there are a lot of people who think the scientists know everything, and they don't know everything.
There are a lot of people who think they know nothing. So, Brad, let me hear from you on that.
Well, it's interesting. I agree wholeheartedly with Kelly. I think that's the number one thing I tell people when they ask me this question. It's like, sometimes it's okay to say you don't know, mm-hmm. because we don't know. We're not – if meteorology and climatology was the medical field, we'd still be chopping arms off every time somebody got an infection, because we're just not there with the technology and the ability to understand this stuff. Now, I'm pretty
But you have Doppler radar.
Well, you got to understand.
That's for the today.
Yeah. The collection of data has changed so much just in my short career. I mean, I've been doing this a while, 15 years now, and it's amazing to me the high-resolution data we get from satellites, from mesonets, from Doppler radar that we didn't have 10, 15 years ago. I mean, you think about tornadoes. You know, there's not a tornado in this country that I don't get a cell phone picture of in 5 seconds of it happening. Mm-hmm. Now, in 1980, 85, if a tornado went through a farm in Kansas, the only people that knew that tornado occurred was the farmer and his wife. Okay? Nobody else knew about it. That isn't the case anymore. And when it comes to hurricanes, before the 1960s when we had satellites, how many storms were in the middle Atlantic that we never saw because we didn't have a satellite to see them? So when it comes to climate change, I tend to believe it's not a 0 or 100% thing. And I think as a scientist, if you approach it from a scientific standpoint, to say that it's not occurring is just as scientifically inaccurate as saying everything is to blame for it.
So we have flooding in Europe right now. Prague has these 100-year floods going on, I believe. We've had significant weather events in the middle of the country with tornadoes this season. We've had incredible drought and fires in the Southwest for years now. We've had drought in the Southeast for years, which seems to be ameliorating some with all these rains we've been getting. We had what I perceive to have been a wet winter, although not a cold one, a wet winter here. And now we have Andrea with dumping tons of rain up and down the East Coast. Last year we had Hurricane Sandy, which walloped the Northeast. If it's not climate change, and if it is just cyclical, what drives the cycles?
That's a great question.
Well, I would say the sun would be a number one driver. And then you also have to look at just ocean temperatures. I mean, some of the biggest shifts in our climate have to do with warming and cooling of oceans. The Pacific is the biggest body of water on the planet Earth. If it warms or cool, it has huge impacts on the rest of the globe. Everybody probably is familiar with El Nino and La Nina. There are very similar what we call teleconnections or climate cycles that occur in other oceans around the world. And if you combine several of these, you can get pretty wacky weather.
So we are experiencing, if I understand this correctly, the El Nino right
now. We're actually in what we jokingly call it La Nada. It's the the neutral phase. We're in between. We're technically neutral. And looking out in the summer, it looks like it's going to stay neutral, which, to be honest with you, it makes it very difficult to forecast because we kind of know what happens in El Nino and La Nina years. When it's neutral, it's kind of like a wild card.
So you don't know what's good because we're in between El Nino and what's the other
La
one?
Niña. La Niña and El Niño.
I've got to learn Spanish. Tropical Storm Andrea was described as record-breaking in terms of the amount of rainfall associated with it for such an early-season tropical storm. We got, 4 to 6 inches in this region?
Some places,
At New York City Central Park, got 4.5 inches, more than double the record set in 1918. So would you agree that Andrea was record-breaking, and would it have been record-breaking had it come through later in the season?
Record-breaking in, as far as amount of rain?
I guess, yeah.
Well, I mean, any tropical system can dump that much rain, and it depends on how quickly the storm is moving. Thankfully, that storm was, by the time it reached the Northeast, flying. If it had slowed down, you'd still be talking about the flooding going on in New York and up north.
Meteorologist and former hurricane hunter Dr. Jeff Master, do you know who he is?
Oh, yes. Very.
He says Andrea's formation in June continues a pattern of an unusually large number of early season Atlantic named storms that we've seen in recent years. June, he says, is usually a quiet month like November, second only to November, but we've seen storm activity in June double since 1995. Is that an indication that hurricane season is getting longer?
I would say it's probably starting sooner because the water's starting off warmer. But you also have to think, naming a storm is kind of a human thing. We kind of, in the recent years, I would argue the Hurricane Center likes to name every thunderstorm now in the Atlantic. Because you got to remember, this isn't a scientific process. This is just a human saying, I think this is a tropical cyclone right now. and it's reached a criteria as a human that I agree that it's 39 mile per hour winds, we're going to call it a tropical storm. Mm-hmm. And I think we're naming a lot more storms. And something else that happened that a lot of people don't realize, subtropical storms, which were kind of a hybrid, they didn't used to get names. And they changed that criteria not too long ago. So now subtropical storms get names, and which adds to the number of named storms. And subtropical storms tend to occur early and late in the season because they tend to be hybrid systems that form on fronts. And
but a hurricane isn't a hurricane until it's 74 mile per hour.
Correct.
So,
correct.
That hasn't changed, right?
No, but the naming, tropical storms, if you get a name, you can name a tropical storm out in the middle of the Atlantic for – I would argue we should change the criteria for a length of time that it maintains that strength instead of a 12-hour period. Give it a name, and then it's gone.
If we're just confusing the issue, why are we naming these subtropical storms?
The original idea for naming storms was so when we were on TV or you were reading about it in a newspaper or hearing about it on a radio, you knew which storm we were talking about because they did last for days, as Brad said. Hmm. And that was the real reason we started naming storms in the first place.
I'm curious about something else because Brad mentioned a minute ago that the ocean temperatures in the Atlantic have gone up 1 or 2 degrees, which sounds tiny to me. How could that possibly make a difference? But evidently it does. But why are we experiencing warmer ocean temperatures when we're also experiencing melting glaciers and ice packs in the North and South Poles? Why isn't that melting ice cooling the ocean?
Well, yeah. Remember, most of the melting is sea ice in the Arctic. Actually, the Antarctic is adding ice currently. The Arctic has had massive melt off of ice last summer, and a lot of people see that and they think, "Oh, the ocean's going to rise." It's going. You got to remember, sea ice floats on the water. It's like having ice in your glass. Mm-hmm. If it all melts, your glass doesn't overflow. All right, it's already displacing water.
But doesn't that cool the warmer liquid in the glass?
Well, you got to remember too, a lot of that cool water is going to sink and it's going to cause upwelling. So you're going to get, and that's fresh water too. You remember, it's fresh water melting on the surface, so it's not mixing with the salt water. Most of the warming of the oceans is occurring in the mid and upper latitudes. And even though it's warming, we say that warming, it's still cooler than you would say. You're talking about like the Arctic warming. You know, it's instead of minus 60, it's minus 58. It's still below freezing. And oftentimes these warming trends are much more pronounced in the mid and upper latitudes because that 1 to 2 degrees you think is minor can be much bigger in the northern latitudes.
I know you're here to talk about hurricanes, but we have had these monster tornadoes this year, and I saw a couple of them on the news last night on television. More monster. I don't recall seeing these, and maybe it's because of what Brad says, that people have iPhones now, and they just take pictures of them as they come through, and they couldn't, and they email them to television stations, and we see them as a result. But these are enormous storms, like 2 miles wide, some of these tornadoes. How unusual is that? What's going on in the middle of the country in Tornado Alley that's causing, that's driving all of this?
Well, that's highly unusual to have a tornado that wide. I mean, that tornado you're referring to from last week, I believe, was the widest on record. There's still some scientific talk about how strong it actually was due to the damage it created, because that's how we measure a tornado strength. But as we were saying a little bit earlier, tornado season has actually gotten off to a very late start. Mm-hmm. I mean, we went through most of May very, very quiet. Even in the Carolinas, we have had very little true severe weather.
What is it about Tornado Alley that makes it Tornado Alley?
Warm geography of it. Yeah. Yeah, right there in the center of the country, you really don't have any sort of a barrier between the cold, dry air coming in from the north and the very moist, warmer air coming in from the south. We see those same patterns eventually work their way over to us, but by the time they do, both of those contrasting air masses have moderated a little bit. So we usually don't quite get that extreme clash mm-hmm. in other parts of the country.
Yeah, I think it's weird that we talk so much about this tornado when, in fact, and Steve is exactly right, we're still well below average for tornadoes. Mm. I just looked, March's preliminary, or May, excuse me, preliminary numbers, 247 tornadoes, which seems like a lot, but average is 250.
I think you grew up in Ohio, is that
yes.
right?
Yes.
I know that you went to the University of Maryland and worked for a while in the Washington, D.C. area, Steve.
Right.
Where did you grow up?
Outside of Boston.
Okay. And you were from Idaho, right?
Grew up in Idaho, went to school in North Dakota.
Is there weather aside from snow?
Surprisingly, yes. While it is, of course, known for the incredibly cold, windy winters, It gets very hot in the summer and surprisingly humid in that part of the country as well. In fact, I was reading just the other day the record dew point, I believe, is from Minnesota, of all places. And Wisconsin has posted some really high dew points as well. So surprisingly hot and humid at times in the summer. And then, yes, unbearably cold in the winter.
So you've all been from different parts of the country. You've all worked and done the weather in different parts of the country. How would you characterize our weather here? Is this a weather city?
I think it is. I actually love it because there's very few places in the country you can live where you get almost exactly four seasons. Mm-hmm. You get 3 months of every season. And as a meteorologist, I know maybe a lot of people don't like this out there, but I love the changeability. I love the challenge. And I love the fact that if you get tired of the heat, you know it's going to come to an end. Yeah. If you get tired of the cold, you know it's going to come to an end. We get a little bit of everything. And we're lucky that we get to work in an environment and a climate where we have mountain weather to forecast. We have tropical weather to forecast. And we get a little bit of everything. So as a meteorologist, it really is, to me, a great weather city.
We are influenced by just about everything.
Yeah.
The Atlantic, the mountains pose a very interesting forecast problem. Different in the winter than it would be in the summer, but sometimes it helps us out. Sometimes it makes things a lot worse.
I would agree. From a forecasting standpoint, we do have a big variety, but I will also admit, having spent a lot of time in Idaho and North Dakota, I do wish we saw a little more of the snow in the mountains down into the Charlotte area, because I forecast snow for the mountains all the time and see pictures, but I'm generally not in it in the winter.
You are not well.
I'm with you, Kelly.
John emails, while you're asking how they make their seasonal predictions, you should also ask how accurate their predictions have been in the past. How accurate have these seasonal hurricane forecasts by other people, not you, been in the past?
Well, some have been better than others, but this is where my cynical and my devil's advocate side will come in. It's funny because, especially for NOAA, they issue the forecast and they also get to verify the forecast. So it's like somebody investigating themselves, where they get to issue a forecast and then they get to decide how many storms they name during the season. So if they really wanted to, they could tweak the numbers. Plus, you got to look at their forecast. They give these huge numbers, like 15 to 22. I mean, that's like me forecasting 50 to 80. And it's really easy to get it right. So they tend to get it more right than you think, just because of the huge spreads that they give in their forecast.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more with Brad Panovich from WCNC-TV, Steve Udelson from WSSC-TV, and Kelly Franson from WBTV as we talk more about summer hurricane season and other weather phenomena in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. A lot of W's in this sentence. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We have three very famous people in our midst today. You know them if you watch television. Kelly Franson, a meteorologist with WBTV Channel 3. Brad Panovich, chief meteorologist with WCNC-TV Channel 36. And Steve Udelson, chief meteorologist with WSSC-TV Channel 9. They're ubiquitous, particularly in times of bad weather. I did not see any television yesterday at all. And I work in a building that has no windows, so I was completely oblivious to what went on yesterday afternoon. How long were you guys on the air yesterday talking
about
the weather?
It wasn't that bad.
It was very quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say we only cut in for like an hour, and that was like we were done.
You know, you were talking about how it doesn't matter that we have – if we have 150 hurricanes in the Atlantic, we only care about the one that hits land. And I think Americans are fairly – Amerocentric about everything,
yes,
including the news. But there are big situations going on in Europe right now with flooding, record floods in part of Europe, etc. So is this extraordinary weather season, which I view as extraordinary because what do I know? I'm just watching the news on TV and I'm seeing tornadoes and I'm seeing fires and I'm seeing flooding and tropical storms and the flooding in Europe. Is this worldwide? Or is the world experiencing some kind of extraordinary weather change or pattern? Or is it just the normal course of events right now that we're just hearing more about because of communication?
I would head more toward, it's more normal. I mean, yeah, there have been some outlying events like the tornadoes the last couple of weeks in Oklahoma or the flooding in Europe. But I think it's the 24-hour news cycle now.
Yeah.
They have nothing else to fill their time with. So, boy, you're going to see weather because weather sells. I mean, you every time the weather gets interesting. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's no secret, and Steve's right. I mean, weather – the news media has figured out a long time ago that people love weather.
Yeah.
The more you talk about it, the more people watch.
They love it until you interrupt my show.
Yes.
Very good point. Very good point.
And then they get really ticked off, particularly the people who watch the soaps. They really don't like it when you interrupt their stories.
I'd say sports argues that just as much, if not more.
That's probably true. So what is your policy? How do you decide when to run those crawls with the beep, beep, beeps that diminish the audio and hide the dialogue? And when do you decide the time has come to break into regular programming? Because this does actually – people don't understand this. When you do that, it actually costs the station.
Right. We lose money.
I think people often think, especially if we're interrupting something that they want to see, they think, oh, they're up there because they just want to be on TV again and they're having so much fun. No, the last thing we want to do is interrupt your favorite program because, believe you me, we get plenty of hate emails and phone calls and all sorts of things. So we will cut in if we think we need to cut in. If the weather situation warrants it, then by all means, we're going to be on there telling you about it.
Who makes that decision? Do you make that decision as the meteorologist? Did you walk into the program director or the news director's office and say, we got to break in? Or do they come to you and say, you got to break in?
In our shop, we're pretty lucky, and I would assume it's every shop. They trust the meteorologist to make that call.
Absolutely, yes.
I would say yes for the most part. There are situations where the boss might, be leaning a little more one way than the other. But by all means, if I said, no, we need to be on, I think he would say, well, yes, then.
Yeah, I think the only time I had restriction on me was during the Olympics or some big program where they say, if you're going to do this, let's be selective on where or when.
And I think, Mike, that has really changed.
Yeah.
The school of thought on that has really changed because when I first got here in the 90s, we cut in for every severe thunderstorm warning, every single one. We wouldn't necessarily stay on for the entire length of the warning, but we would cut in. We wouldn't let the crawl system handle it. We would handle it because we were the severe weather people.
Right.
But then we got a lot of flack from people saying, you're cutting into this, that, the other thing, every 2 minutes, and people get desensitized.
Yeah.
So we wait until it's – let's put it to you this way. I can almost guarantee you that by the time one of the three of us cut in, it's worth it. It's because something big is going on.
I know a little bit about this because I've been in the business for a while. So that's why I wanted to bring this up because people don't understand it, and I think that they do need to understand that when you're taking a lot of personal career responsibility on your shoulders when you break in to normal programming, and you are costing these television stations money when you break in. So you're doing it because you feel that the need is there and great at the time. And I know that in Oklahoma, in Moore, a lot of the lives that were saved, the people attributed to the fact that the meteorologist broke into programming. And one meteorologist said, if you are in the path of this storm, you will not survive. So find shelter. And that saved lives.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it works both ways as far as cutting in goes. I mean, holding back is also effective because then when you are on, people realize, oh, this is important. I need to pay attention.
Uh-huh.
You run into the apathy thing again, where if you're on every 2 minutes warning about something, people will just tune you out.
But in this day and age of Twitter, and my phone went off 1,000 times over the weekend for weather events. I didn't even know I had that feature on my phone. I have all of your apps. And I don't know which app this alert thing came from, but it was going off all the
Probably
time.
Probably all of them.
Yeah.
That's right.
And now the government sent you
alerts. Yeah, now the government sent you.
So in this day and age, has it become less important for you to break into television?
Not at all.
You can do it on your apps?
I think it's kind of a mixed thing. I mean, it's still important. As Steve alluded to, I think he made a very crucial point there. It's got to the point where you being in front of that camera and people seeing your eyes, your body language, your emotion can really relay a lot of information to the viewer. One of the biggest advances since I've been in the TV business is the study of social science. How do people respond to stuff you say and do? And a lot of times when we cut in and it's a life, limb, property type of situation, we want people to take certain action. So for an Oklahoma, for that meteorologist to say something, which was probably said staring into the camera with some emotion, I guarantee you a lot of the people that saw it said, whoa, I've never seen him do that.
That's
or
what
say
they said.
That.
I've never seen something like that.
So
before.
I'm going to take shelter. Right. And I think that's the most important role we have as broadcasters now is when there's a life-threatening situation, they need to see you. They need to know, hey, it's serious. So I think we tend to only do it now in very, very serious situations where we think that somebody's life, limb, or property is mm-hmm. going to be at risk.
And you asked about being on TV, how important that is. I mean, we are giving you information that you won't get from a crawl, you won't get from a text. Yeah. We'll show you, you know, how strong the winds are, where they're headed, put a track on the storm. I mean, texts or crawl systems won't do that for you.
It's also interesting because when broadcasting first came into being in the 20s, one of the parameters was that you operated in the public interest. And this is one of the few areas left where broadcasters actually operate in the public interest to their own detriment many yeah. times. Put your headphones on, and we'll take a couple of phone calls from folks who have been holding on for a while, and we'll begin with Tom in Charlotte. Tom, welcome.
Hi, this is an old boy from Savannah, Georgia. When I was a kid, we used to be very disappointed because we would never get hit by hurricanes. We would always have near misses. And the pseudoscience says that because the Savannah River flows in right there, that it tends to steer the hurricanes away from Savannah. We've just seemed to have missed hurricanes right and left for going on near 100 years. Is there a reason for that?
Geography. It's the shape of the coastline there. Mm. North Florida and most of the Georgia coast, because of the way it's situated, will not be hit.
It's indented.
Basically, yeah. So storms either head toward Grand Strand, Outer Banks, or south into the Florida Peninsula.
Yeah, it's just a smaller target. I mean, when you look at Florida and southern Louisiana, I think they're the two areas that get hit the most. Mm-hmm. They're peninsulas. They stick out into the water, so they get hit by the traffic of tropical season. And if you live in an area like Savannah where it's more of a north-south coast, that's like a piece of paper put on vertically. It's really hard to hit. If you tilt it horizontally, it'd be really easy to hit. Mm. So an area like that on the coast is just – it's just pure luck, really.
We certainly – like I said, when we were little kids, we felt unlucky. But as a grown-up with relatives and whatnot down there, I feel very fortunate as it happened.
I would think that you're very unfortunate because of the lack of hurricanes that you wished for and the fact that you can't claim to your kids that you walked to school knee-deep in snow, barefoot both ways, right?
Truthfully, the worst damage, we had more damage here in Charlotte from Hugo than any of the damage that we ever had coming. They hit in north of Beaufort, and they hit Jacksonville, but they just never have hit Savannah in, like I said, near 100 years.
Wow. Thank you for your call, Tom. Let me go to Roger in Charlotte. Roger, you're on WFAE.
Hey, good morning. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Good.
I just wanted to say I've heard Brad and Steve especially, but Kelly also, talk about the scientific consensus on global warming, and oddly enough, on the American Meteorological Society's own page, they've released a statement that says that climate change is unequivocal, the evidence is overwhelming, and that it is caused by human it's human caused. Additionally, there's over 200 national and international scientific organizations also saying the same thing. Climate change is real. It's caused by humans. And I'm wondering if television ratings are driving your three guests to suggest that the scientific community is not, that there's not an overwhelming consensus, or if it's something else.
I'm honestly not sure how that would drive the television ratings, in all honesty.
Well, I think that if something approaching half of the people in the area don't understand the science or don't believe in the science, and you come out saying you also don't, it makes you seem more folksy and connected. If you come out and say what the scientific community is saying, you might offend some of your listeners.
Well, I mean, that I would say that's certainly a possibility, because most people don't look at this from a scientific standpoint. They look at it from a political standpoint and a policy standpoint. That's completely separate than the science. You said that, you know, there's a consensus that there's climate change. I would agree. But climate changes. That's a proven fact. In that same statement from the American Meteorological Society, it's most likely caused by man or influence. The problem is we don't know to what percentage. Is it 0%? Is it 100%?
It actually reads it's the dominant cause.
Dominant cause, but it doesn't give a percentage. And I would argue this. This is the problem we run into in discussing this, is people want to approach it from one side and not be open-minded about the science. I equate often this discussion to steroids in baseball. Every home run is not a steroid-driven home run. We know that steroids likely increase the number of home runs during the steroid era. But to sit there and say that Barry Bonds' home run on April 30th, 1999 was caused by steroids is 100% inaccurate.
Now,
you can't say that.
Sitting here 4 feet from Brad Panovich, watching his body language as he talks about this, he's emotional about this. I'd like to hear from the other two of you on this same question.
It is a frustrating topic in large part because of what Brad was saying. It tends to be approached from a political issue. As a political issue rather than a scientific issue. And my own standpoint relates back to what I said earlier. I feel that scientists don't know everything. I don't consider myself to be in one camp or the other. I think it would be crazy to say that humans are not impacting the Earth. That would be ridiculous. But I also think it's crazy to say we are 100% the driving factor, the reason the Earth is getting warmer. There have been numerous studies lately that Steve was referring to earlier that suggest some cooling. We also have had an issue where CO2 levels have gone up crazily, and we have not seen temperatures respond as expected to the extent that we were saying, we being the scientific community as a whole, we haven't seen that spike in temperatures recently that was called for.
And CO2 levels are at their highest ever right
absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
Right?
Climate models started to come into existence in the 1980s when computing power really started to ramp up. Mm-hmm. These climate models have failed to predict the amount of warming that we've had. It's been much less than the vast majority of models had suggested in the 80s. A lot of the times what they're doing is going back into time and trying to figure out why. Mm. Why have we not been able to predict? And as Kelly said, it's because we just don't know. You know, people are used to seeing us on TV every day and saying, and there's your forecast for tomorrow, like it's etched in stone. Forecasting for tomorrow is very different than forecasting for 50 or 100 years from now.
Thank you for your call, Roger, which leads to Paul's question, who says, what can we expect to see in terms of ocean temperatures in our lifetime? Will it ever cool, or will the trend continue upward for the next 40 to 60 years?
It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the oceans. The oceans, you realize, is a huge heat sink in and of itself. It takes a long time to warm the oceans. It also takes a long time to cool them off. So there may be a lag. While the atmosphere in general may begin to cool, it may be a while before the oceans cool. I mean, it's just like if you boil water on your stove, if you turn the heat off, it doesn't cool off right away. It takes a while.
We only have a minute and a half left, but John in Monroe says he wants to know why forecasters always stand in front of the map. He can never see the whole map. What's up with that? I want to know why, when you're showing us a tornado, you don't take the darn banner off the bottom of the screen so we can see the whole tornado. You can never see what it's doing on the ground because the banner that says tornado in Oklahoma, Channel 9, Channel 3, Channel 36, is up there. Why can't you take the banner down?
That's a TV question because I'm a firm believer in that too. I don't like having banners all over the place. And when you stand in front of the map, it does shrink it down incredibly. Thank goodness for 16:9. We're getting more room on the HDTVs because back in the day when you had 4:3, you ended up with like a third of the screen left to point to.
Okay, no one's going to answer the question. So, so in this area where we don't get a lot of hurricanes and we don't get a lot, thankfully, tornadoes, what should we have? How should we be prepared? Because along the coast, you should have food and water. Should we be doing the same things, all of us?
I think it's always smart to be prepared, And while we don't tend to see these strong tornadoes, we certainly get tornadoes. Always good to know where you need to go if there's a tornado warning in your area.
Kelly Franson's a meteorologist with WBTV Channel 3. Brad Panovich, chief meteorologist with WCNC Channel 36. And Steve Udelson, chief meteorologist with WSOC-TV Channel 9. They can go back now to being competitors. But I thank you for sitting here for the hour together in the same studio. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mike.